Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Single Mommy Fabulous, Episode 6, Chronic Illness and Motherhood.
And before we get started, I just kind of wanted to introduce you to what chronic illness is. And chronic illness is a condition that lasts usually a year or more. Most last a lifetime. And there is no magic pill for chronic illness. That's one thing that people don't seem to understand. Getting rest is not a cure. Getting rest just allows people to function better. And that goes for anyone, whether you're ill or not. Diet changes are usually management tools. They're not seen as cures. You can manage your illness a little bit better if your diet's good or if you avoid certain foods, but you're not going to see some miraculous cure. And chronic illness does not always present itself to the naked eye. You can look at someone like myself or Adrian and think there's absolutely nothing wrong with us because everything changes so quickly with chronic illness. And we're going to tell you all about it this episode. So Adrian, take it away. Oh, but before you take it away, I just want to welcome you back. We missed you last episode.
Yay. Yeah, I missed everyone and being on the show, but it was a great episode. I was so excited when I heard it. So yeah, good job, guys. So my chronic illness is I have lupus. It is a disease that everyone's heard of, but most people don't know exactly what it is. They just know someone who's had it or someone who's died from complications of it. So I'll tell you. Lupus is an autoimmune disease, which means that your body attacks itself. So in people who are not sick, your immune system, it's kind of always in the background, but it's not technically active until a virus or something comes into your body. And then it kind of, you know, the switch flips and your immune system gets really active to get rid of the foreign invader, whatever it is, right? In lupus, my immune system, that switch never turns off. It's always on. My immune system is always fighting, always active, all of the time. And since there's no foreign body to attack, my immune system attacks me. And so that results in a lot of pain, a lot of joint pain, muscle pain and weakness. Some of the side effects are things that I've experienced over the years. I don't actively experience all of these right now, but over the years, hair loss, there was probably three times in my journey that I've lost my hair almost completely. Sometimes I get little like sores in my mouth. They look like little tiny white pimples. They're not usually painful, but they just feel weird and gross in your mouth. I've had Raynaud's disease, which is when your fingertips turn blue and go ice cold or numb for literally no reason. Various rashes. I bruise very easily. I think that's about the bulk of it. What they call brain fog. It's cognitive dysfunction. So there are times, it's better now, but in the past, there have been times when I have gotten to work and forgotten how to do my job. Or there have been times, you know, like, you know, you just forget things that you know, even things that are like routine, it just kind of goes out the window. My short-term memory is trash because of it.
In there.
Yeah, you know, so so this is something that affects me daily, but if you were to look at me, there doesn't look like there's anything wrong with me. I'm fairly mobile most of the time. You know, I don't look like there's anything going on. So it's really hard to convince people that I'm actually sick all the time and that I have to preserve my energy as much as I can because I really just don't have any. That's another thing that comes with it is fatigue. And fatigue is way more than just being tired.
Yes.
You literally feel like you've been hit with a sack of bricks and are just laid out and you can't really do much. And it's a persistent feeling. It's not something that entirely comes and goes. It just, the intensity varies, but it's always there. It doesn't ever just kind of go away. You don't ever feel rested. You don't ever feel like you've gotten enough sleep. You don't ever feel like you're at full energy because you're not. So yeah, so that is me.
Yeah, and I want to echo that, like, rheumatoid arthritis and lupus have a lot in common in the fact that they are diseases that attack your body. Rheumatoid arthritis is thought to attack the joints more than anything else. It can, when it gets out of control, attack other parts of your body and actually your systems and organs. Just a background of rheumatoid arthritis, it's a progressive disease that causes inflammation. So there's inflammation throughout my body at all times, which is challenging. I don't know what joint's going to flare up. So one day it might be my elbow that I can't move. And the next day I can't move my neck or I can't move my knees. I tend to have more problems with my knees. It started out in my upper body with me not being able to even raise my shoulders. So, which is really not something that most doctors go, oh, you have rheumatoid arthritis. It's hard to diagnose. I've known people that it's taken years. I got fortunate. I went into my doctor and she's like, you sound like you have rheumatoid arthritis. I'm going to check, do some blood work. And I came back with a positive factor for rheumatoid arthritis. And so it was pretty simple. It was less than a month. Then I was, you know, immediately put on methotrexate, which is commonly used for cancers, just to kind of bring down your immune system. In my case, it was bringing down the immune system. It is a chemotherapy drug, so it is very rough on you. Basically, when I started the drug, it would put me out for 2 days. I was nauseous, tired, it was the worst. The cure almost felt, and it's not even a cure, but the management felt worse than the disease. Because I would lose days. I was very fortunate to have a job where I had built up enough time to take off time, but you know, it became very complicated last year. When I, you know, for lack of a better term, I almost died because of complications of this disease. You know, it was hard for them to figure out what was going on with me when I first went into the ER, with a chronic migraine of 3 weeks. They thought that I had excessive brain fluid and diagnosed me with something that I can't remember the name of. I will be sure to put it in the show notes because it's a very interesting disease as well. In fact, it usually shows up in people who are overweight. They put you on these medicines that I feel like, again, worse than the pain of a migraine. So I did that for a couple of months and then that wasn't it. And then turns out that it was inflammation or pericarditis around my heart. And that I had fluid and from inflammation around my heart. And it was slowly strangling my heart. So that was a very scary time for me because trying to protect my daughter from all that was going on was what my family was doing. And honestly, it's not necessarily what I would have done if I had my druthers, but you know, there were moments when I was scared that I would never see her again, that this was the end of my life. That's how terrible I felt. And I never want to feel that again, to be real honest, because it's not okay to think about leaving your 8-year-old, I have to say. And so, you know, it makes you do a little bit more reevaluation of your life. But yeah, the disease is pretty terrible. And I remember the one thing I remember, I think it was the most hilarious thing, was like somebody came, one of my coworkers who was fairly new to the department goes, "How come some days you walk just fine? And then one day it's one leg, and then the next day it's the other leg. And then the next day you have on braces on your hands." And I'm like, "Honey, I will never, ever know what's going to hurt when. And I will never, ever be able to just walk without a cane sometimes." And I haven't for 8 months now. Like, I haven't seen a cane in 8 months. Thank you, God, because I hate canes. And then even though I got a cool purple one to go with my purple and royal personality, but,
yeah,
you know, canes your are princess. Not cute. They're not cute, especially when you're young. It's just like people look at you like, what? I had a man try to race me at the PX because I had a cane, right? And he had a cane and we both had on tennis shoes. And he was like, "Oh, I'm sure he thought I was an injured vet." It was the cutest and sweetest thing. And he's just like, "Let's race." And I'm just because I'm like, oh my gosh. Thank you for making light of the situation, sir. But I'm also like, I got a freaking cane. Like, I don't want a cane. Like, I want a cane. You know, I want somebody to say, "Those are really cute shoes." Not, "Hey, got a cane. Let's race down the aisle." So,
right.
You know, but thank God for lightness, and thank God for people who will joke with me knowing that I'm not an old lady, but there's something wrong, and trying to cheer me up. And wherever you are, gentlemen, I love you to death, because that was one of the best days of my life. And that was when I was really, really sick. So it made my freaking day. I have to say it really did.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the harder parts, like the physical pain, you know, over time you get so used to it that it's kind of even hard to gauge how much pain you're in, right?
Like, yeah.
I know I have a hard time with that. People will ask me, or like when I go to the doctor, they'll be like, "Oh, you know, well, how's your pain today on a scale of 1 to 10? And it's like, well, to me, it feels like it might be a 3, but yeah, to the average person, it might actually be a 7 or an 8, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've been feeling it for so long.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that bad. And I always try to equate it back to before I got my diagnosis and the pain that I was in then. Like, I think, oh, that's a 10, you know? And it's like, I'm nowhere near that, even though this is pretty painful, but it's not that. So it must be a 3, you know? And it's like, it's never quite right. But I think beyond the pain, I think the mental aspect of it is almost worse. Because like, you know, just like that, like you were saying, you know, like even though you were actually like kind of dying, but it's like, like you know, feeling like you're going to die.
Yeah.
You know? And feeling so guilty, you know, when you're incapacitated and you can't do things, you can't cook, you can't, you know, whatever, like your daily stuff, you know, it's like, I think that hurts more, you know, just knowing that you can't be available and you can't do the things that you want to do. You can't do the things that, you know, with people that you care about. And then the kids, it's like, you know, sorry, kid, but, you know, I'm feeling like crap today. So I don't know what you're going to eat, but... You know,
I'm gonna lay here in this bed.
Yeah, it's like I kind of can't do anything about that, you know?
So, like, right. That's really tough. Yeah. No, I mean, and when I was first diagnosed, Olivia was 2 or 3, and not being able to pick up your kid is pretty terrible. You know?
It's awful.
You feel like a real jerk. And so, you know, despite all the pain and that it causes, you force yourself to do things. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I don't remember if I didn't not pick her up or if I did. I just remember that there was so much pain and I was having a hard time like walking up the stairs at BART to get to work. So, you know, there's a lot of things I remember. I don't remember neglecting to be a loving mother, but I, and not to say that if you can't pick up your kid, you're not being loving. It's just, I'm so affectionate with my child that it's like, I can imagine how devastating that must have been for me. Like because I can't remember. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know. And she's never complained about it. So I guess I did all right during that time.
Yeah, I was diagnosed. Isaiah was, he was almost five. It was like right before he turned five or so, somewhere around there. And that was tough because I was really sick for a long time. It took a almost a year for like the medication to really work. So I was just, that was really tough. And he was so active and so, you know, crazy and loved to play, loved to run around. And I used to do all those things with him.
Yeah.
And then it just stopped. And he did not understand for a really long time. He thought I just didn't want to play with him. He thought that maybe like he was being bad and it was like punishment. And it took a long time to like convince him, like, it's not you. It's not anything that you've done.
Right.
Mommy's just sick. Like, I can't help it, you know? And then with Kalia, so I shouldn't have gotten pregnant with her. You know, yay, accidents. But I did. And, you know, unplanned. So that was interesting, you know, being pregnant with lupus. But, you know, but when she was born, I had a hard time. Like, you know, there's literally days my arms don't work because it's so painful. I can't move them, you know, and having a newborn and trying to deal with that when you're in pain, it's like, it was really hard. I used to have Isaiah just bring her to me sometimes. If I couldn't get out of the bed, she's in her crib or something, she's crying and I can't get up to get her, I would have to call him and, you know, like, Isaiah, please, can you just put her next to me? Like, I can't even hold her, but just put her next to me. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd have him put her like, you know, so her face is like in my neck, you know. And thank God it worked, but there was just days like that where I just couldn't. And it's like the guilt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, but there's no way around it. You know, thankfully there weren't many days like that, but there were some. And it was just, you know, thankfully, you know, I did have Isaiah and he was old enough to do things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And even now, you know, I'll have moments where I just can't function well, you know? So Kalia, she's good about, you know, making herself stuff to eat and she'll come and check on me and bring me water and, you know, tuck me in and stuff.
Well, that's cute. I wish my daughter was a little more independent, but living with grandma means she's not.
Oh yeah.
Like, sure. She, like yesterday she asked me to make her waffles. I'm like, those things go in the toaster, fool. Put that in the toaster. Like, I had to tell her, I was like, I'm not grandma. I'm not going to do everything for you because I don't want you to not know how to do things.
Yeah.
So mommy's rules are that I'm the jerk and you will do it yourself. And I'm okay with being the jerk, honestly, right. Because I need her to get some independence, regardless of the fact that grandma is grandma. And I have to respect that. I'm not going to tell my mom, hey, stop microwaving for her. Stop doing the things that she at 8 years old can do. She's almost nine. She can do a lot more than you're allowing her to do. And also, if you're not around and I'm not well, how is she going to know? Like, yeah. If I can't make it down the stairs to make her waffles, is she going to starve?
Right.
You got to let her learn some stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're not going to be here.
And that's
important. I understand your concerns, but she's...
Right. And dealing with, you know, stuff like this, it's like the reality just is that there's days where it's not going to happen. And
yeah,
it's only going to happen if you make it happen, kid.
Right.
You know, That's just true. But it's just hard, and it's hard for them to understand because you're, you know, you're mommy and you do all the things. And I don't know. It's just, it's tough. It's tough to navigate. It's tough to know, like, what's the right thing in the world. But that's parenting, right?
Right. That is parenting. It's hard to know what to tell your kids and what not to tell them and how much they're going to understand at every age level. Like your son, Isaiah, he's old enough to understand everything, right? Because he's a grown, he's an adult. With Kalia, she understands and she protects you. You're very fortunate. My kid understands nothing and refuses to understand. And, you know, I can come home from an infusion, which wrecks me every single time. And she's like, what's for dinner? Why are you sitting on the couch? What's going on? Like, really? I'm like,
seriously, girl?
To just get your family to understand where you're coming from and to understand that you're not going to get better. I mean, I remember when I was really sick and my friends wanted to take me to Apple Hill. Which is many miles away than I thought it was. So I thought I'd be back in time to get Olivia, which I wasn't. So my mom was mad at me about that. And then she's like, why are you going out? And I'm like, you're not supposed to be going out. And I'm like, the doctor said I needed to start walking. So these people wanted to get me out in some sun and away from the stress of being in the house. And, you know, their feelings were all altruistic. They were just trying to help. And, you know, she took it as a negative, and that was really a little bit hurtful to me because I'm like, you know what? This moment was about healing for me and seeing people who care about me and having an ability to talk to them about how I'm feeling because, you know, it's not like people are coming over to the house and hanging out, not that I would want them to. And this is pre-COVID, people. So I can put that out there. This is all before COVID. It's a challenge. It's a challenge. I don't know. For you, has it been really challenging for you and your kids as far as it sounds like they understand and they help and they don't, and the people in your life are very understanding. Has that been your...
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I think I've been fortunate in that way. You know, when I was diagnosed, I was living with my sister and, you know, my niece, Christina, and my mom was still pretty, you know, she was helping a lot with the kids. Because I think it was about 5 and Teenie was like 3, you know, so she was still helping a lot and babysitting a lot. And like, you know, I relied on them. Especially in the beginning, those first few years, I relied on them heavily because there was like I almost lost jobs from being so sick and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Like I just couldn't. It was really tough, you know. And if it hadn't been for them, you know, I would have had many more troubles. Yeah, but it's weird because like they were very supportive. But still didn't understand.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was a lot of times my resting times were seen as laziness. And I am a fairly lazy person. Like, I'll cop to that, you know, like I am, right? But there were a lot of times where I would be not feeling well. Yeah. And you can't tell because I don't look sick and I'd be, you know, just laying around and whatever. And it would just be like, you know, so much contention, like, oh, you know, you're just not doing that. Oh, you're, you know, like I'm using my disease as an excuse, which I would never do that. And they would never say that, but that would be like the feeling like, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just saying that because you don't want to wash the dishes. And no, I'll tell you that I don't want to wash the dishes. Like, right. I don't have to lie about it, you know?
Yeah.
But so like they were supportive and super helpful for years, you know, I didn't say that part. I have had lupus for, I just passed my 17th anniversary, so 17 years.
Should we celebrate that? I don't. Wait, is that a celebration or a mourning? I'm not sure which one.
It's neither. It's just
it's a fact.
Reality. Yeah, just a fact. So it's been 17 years. So, over all that time, they've been super helpful, super helpful. I've lived with my sister most of that time, and she's been the most supportive and helpful. And, the period of time when after Demetrius passed away, I almost ended up in the hospital, and, she basically took care of Kalia for months afterwards because I wasn't available mentally, and physically, because I had a perpetual flare for like 4 months.
Well, and that's stress too, right?
Exactly.
Once you stress out, the disease takes that as an opportunity to just trash your body. All I can say.
Yeah, exactly. Very long answer to your question.
No, it's not really a long answer. It's the truthful answer. It is a struggle, I think, for all of us to get the help, accept the help, want to ask for help, but feel like we're going to get negatively judged and other people's perception of what's going on with us. Right. When I break a promise to my daughter because I'm not feeling well, it's often received here in my home as a broken promise by everyone rather than, are you feeling okay today? I don't think that you can expect that people will get it to that extreme, even though I wish they would. But it's, why would I break promises to the person that I love the most in the world? I wouldn't. I don't. I'm not a, most people who've known me for years know that honesty, forthright, being forthright, that's my brand. Like, I just don't. So why would I do that to my kid? I wouldn't.
Exactly.
And so now I'm almost to the point where I don't want to even say we're going to do anything, because if I don't end up doing it, I don't want to be penalized for it.
Right. And that's tough, because it's like you want to be able to plan things, but depending on where you are, in your disease and like your healing process, that's not always possible. It's not possible always to make plans, or you can make them, but
doesn't mean they're going to follow through with them.
Doesn't mean it's going to happen. And it's hard to explain that to children. I used to tell mine, especially Kalia. Isaiah was more, he adapted better to change than Kalia does. Kalia has a very hard time with change. So you can't tell her. You can't tell her anything, because just in case, it's a very real possibility. It may not happen, So it's either I don't tell her at all, or I'll just say, hey, I was thinking about, maybe we'll go do this thing, if I'm feeling well. And she'll be like, oh, okay. And then if it comes up that I'm not feeling well, then she's like, dang, okay, well, you're sick. So like, it's like, then it's like, okay. But if I were to just say, oh, we just can't go, then it doesn't do well with that. But it's still hard, because it's like, you want to take your kids places. You want to have fun. Yeah. You want to go do stuff, Yeah. And then it's like, when you can't, it's just like you let them down. But then it's like you let yourself down almost, kind of, because you're just like, damn it, why can't I just walk?
Why can't I just get over it and move on? Yeah, why can't I just, like, sometimes I'm getting to the point in my disease where I'm like, get a fucking scooter. Like, just do it. I don't want to be in a scooter. At a amusement park, I'm down with it because I don't like to stand in the lines.
Oh, yeah.
All that standing time. I just can't. But
yeah,
I don't want to get a scooter so that we can go to the beach or we can go to the playground and then you get to watch me sit in a scooter while you run around. And that sounds really why am I not a part of your life? Like, why am I being punished? And honestly, sometimes that's what it feels like. Why am I being punished for wanting to love and have fun with my kid? And it's hard. It's hard when you get, especially like you were talking about the mental aspect of it, with being chronically ill, you're chronically depressed. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's like, when this cycle comes where you're not feeling that well and you want to make sure that your kid is having fun and you want to make sure that they're getting what they need. But your brain gets depressed and I don't think it's like a regular depression. It's just where you start psych talking yourself into this, like, well, you're not a very good parent and you're not doing what you're supposed to. And it's all negative self-talk that you have to unprogram yourself because it's like, no. You're allowed to be sick. You're allowed to be tired. And you know what? In the end of the day, what our kids will probably remember is how much we love them and not so much how many times we disappointed them, but how many times we showed up for X, Y, and Z. And, you know, negative memories, unless they're horrible, don't stick around as well as these happy, good memories for children, which is a good thing. They are so very resilient in that way.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you have to remember that, because if you don't remember that, you are going to continually negatively talk to yourself, and you can't, because then you can't parent. Being a parent is understanding that you're going to fail at some things. And for us, we're failing at physical things because of our limitations, and it's not our fault. And being okay with it not being our fault, and being okay with not necessarily being like other parents who plan stuff and say, yeah, we're going to do it, you know? I can remember that for the last probably 3 birthday parties, except for the most recent, the 3 before that, Megan had to do everything. Like, if it weren't for Megan, Olivia wouldn't have a birthday party because I couldn't move. I couldn't do the things I wanted to. She had to get the candles. She had to light them. She had to get the kids organized. I mean, and that's the saddest part of it all is like, I'm like relying on my best friend to do everything for me because I can't. And
it's almost like you feel like you're not even a participant in your life sometimes.
Yeah. You feel, it's like, here's a nice little camera of your life. Get out of the picture, lady. You're not in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember feeling like that in the beginning. I mean, I think, you know, in the last like 3 years or so, I think I'm probably the healthiest that I've been probably ever. You know, so I definitely feel a lot better and I have a lot less flares and a lot less, you know, problems or whatever. But still, it's like that part of it doesn't go away. Because even when I have like little ones, like, you know, a couple of knuckles are swollen. And you would be surprised, like having 1 or 2 swollen knuckles, how that can hinder you. Like, come on, you know, and it's like I type all day. So it's like if I have swollen knuckles, guess who's not working? You know, but it's like even little things like that will throw me into that psych loop where it's just you just can't do anything. And, you know, that's just ridiculous. Like your kids shouldn't be taking care of you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're the parent. Like you need to just get up and suck it up. And then it's just like, no.
No, you get up and suck it up. No, just kidding. It's a weird feeling. It is definitely probably the worst feeling, I think, is to feel like you are a spectator in your own life.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Either, you know, I don't either. you know, and these days, you know, it's a little bit easier to be able to like plan, you know, trips and it's great. Like, cause we usually go to Disneyland every year. Now it's going to be Disney World. Darn, right?
Right.
but it's cute now, like Isaiah, you know, because he does understand. So it like, he understands how I have to plan the trip, you know, like it can't just be, oh, we're just going to go and that's the end. Okay. No, like we have to, like, I have to think, okay, well, what do we want to do? And then I have to build in like nap time, rest time, you know, like all that kind of stuff so that I can make it and be, you know, present.
So you can make it to downtown Disney parades?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and all that kind of stuff. So now it's like, you know, we've done it for so long. You know, now we were planning a trip to Disney World this year, but that got canceled. But as we were planning, he was like, okay, well, if we do this, why don't we do, you know, Animal Kingdom half a day, and then we can go back to the hotel and then you can rest. And then if we want to go back, we'll just leave you and da da da. And I was like, yeah, that's perfect. You know,
yeah,
like, that kind of stuff. It's like, we got to work that in because even though I feel better,
yeah,
you know, the reality is I'm still sick. So, you know, and yeah. I have to plan around it so that I don't make myself sicker. And I think that's a piece that people don't get, you know, like when you plan outings and things like that. And it's just, okay, but if we go do this thing, like, is there a place that I can sit down? Is there a place, you know, like people don't think that far for you because they don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So it's like something that's always on your mind. Even when I take Kalia somewhere, it's like, okay, if we go to this place, like I know after this many hours, I'm going to need a rest.
Yeah.
Is that going to be possible? And if it's not, we can't go there. Yeah. Or I have
that's
to,
why
we
I
can't
just scooter, go man. Just the two of us. I fall yeah. asleep on the scooter. I ain't lying. It happens.
I can imagine. I mean, come on, you know.
And those scooters are expensive to rent. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But like, scooters are the world is a better place with a scooter.
You know, yeah, I thought about one, but my trouble is, you know, it's the whole thing of not looking sick. So it's like I try really hard not to utilize anything like that. In Disneyland, I have to use a wheelchair towards the end of the day. There's no way around it. I have to, because by evening time, if I don't take enough breaks during the day, I'm in so much pain that I'm not really able to walk. And I don't always want to go back to the hotel, you know, and I shouldn't have to, you know what I mean? So I rent a wheelchair, and I tell you what, people are relentless. And it's like, it's cool, you know, that's great that you're standing up for people with disabilities, but can you please recognize that I'm a person that is disabled sometimes? Jeez.
Yeah. I don't know when it was that I broke down and got my disabled placard, and I've had people yell at me and say, you don't look sick. And I'm like, well, fuck you very much too.
Right.
I don't maybe look sick to you. However, I don't know from minute one, if I start walking, what's going to change within those few, like I could be 10 steps from a door and for some reason my asthma gets triggered. And then I'm gasping for air, or that my knee decides that it don't like me no more and starts hurting and swelling for no apparent reason. Hi. And I'm like, hi, oh, I didn't miss you. But it's, and I don't look sick. I look like a healthy person who eats too much, but you know, I've stopped giving a shit. Like I literally had to get over it. And I'm not telling you to do that. I'm saying for my experience, and because I want to be a part of my life, I've just been like, I will do what I need to do to make sure that I can take my daughter to dance practice and that when it's my turn to walk down the stairs and see her dance, I can walk down the stairs and see her dance. I don't care anymore. You know, like I literally don't even care anymore. I'm not here for you. I'm here for her. And that's what it's, this is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Like me or definitely. Don't like me, believe me or don't, I am who I am. You can take it up with the DMV. You can take it up with my doctor. You can take it up with whoever the you want to call, you know, call whoever you want, because if the police show up and I show them my ID, they're going to trace it right back to me and go,
right. Like, what do you want me to do?
So,
no, that's true. That you is know, true.
And, but like I said, I'm not telling you because we all get to our points. Cause I have another friend who her chronic pain is from an injury. And, you know, she was the first one to say, girl, you know what? You're eligible for a scooter. You're eligible for this. You're eligible for that. I'm looking at her like, I am not old enough for a phone. I'm not old enough for this. I'm not old enough for that. And then I'm like, shut up. Shut up. She, you know what? First of all, she's trying to help you.
Yeah.
And secondly, stop being so damn proud. You know what? Yeah, if you want to make right it here. Through the day, whatever it is, and you, and a scooter might help, a scooter, it might be, you know what I mean?
No, that's it. The pride.
It is pride. I mean, who the hell? We're still young. We still want to, you know, be in our lives. For me, I still look at men and want to have like relationships with them. So I'm thinking, if I'm in a scooter, who's going to talk to me? And if they do talk to me, are they going to try to abuse me because they think I can't walk? Oh, like, homie, don't talk to me. Like literally when I'm on a scooter and a guy talks to me, I'm like, what the hell do you want?
Right.
I don't like you.
What is your motive?
What is your motive? So yeah,
totally.
Yeah,
I'll get past it one day because I shouldn't care, you know, and I do my best to just kind of do the best that I can, but there are just time. It's really just when we do those long trips where we're just kind of out all day long, mm-hmm. like those kinds of things, it's like not like I need help after a while, because then it's like everything doesn't want to cooperate, you know. So yeah, so it's just, it's pride. It's being prideful and not wanting to appear a certain way, you know, and not wanting the judgment that comes.
Yeah.
Cause it comes.
Oh, judgment is very judgmental. Really real.
It's, yeah.
And it's annoying.
Yeah. It's extremely annoying, you know, it really is. And it's, you know, it just comes with the territory of, what do they call it? What do they call it that we have? Invisible diseases.
Invisible disabilities. Yes.
Disability, thank you. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a D word. You know, that comes with the territory, you know?
Yeah.
People judge your parenting skills. They judge, you know, and accuse you of not being sick. They judge.
Right.
You know, your work ethic, like everything.
Yeah. Luckily, because I'm crazy, I'm always, I've made it my mission now that wherever I go, because I've had to start a new job, except for when I was at my new one in my town. And I think I just never felt really safe with those people. But I've always been really forthright with my supervisor. Look, I'm hella sick and I'm not going to get better. And this is what my disease is. And this is what it does to me. And you can expect that it'll happen every once in a while, but I work my ass off. And then I just prove that I work my ass off. And when I don't work my ass off, they just go, she must be sick. Because that's, and that helps me. And I think that sometimes embracing your illness and allowing other people to understand a little bit, not that they're going to understand it all, all the way, it helps to make your life slightly easier.
Definitely.
But then again, you know, we're all not the same and all people are not the same, and you have to feel safe, because if you don't feel safe, you can't be honest.
That is very true too.
So now let's take a moment to discuss 5 ways we can show up when we're down for the count.
How I at least show up for my child is to not make promises I'm not sure I'm going to keep. At this point, that's the best that I can do, is not make a promise that I can't keep. And another thing that I do is plan ahead, like for when I'm sick. So when I know that I'm already having a flare and I'm not going to be able to maybe pick her up from dance class or something else, because her dance class is continual and that's her thing, I make sure that my sister or my niece or my mom knows, hey, look, I'm going to come home and I'm going to crash. Can you, you know, usually it's not the same day, it's the day before or something. I try to give as much warning. I'm crashing. Yeah. I'm going to go to work, but I need your help after work. I don't think I can do it. And sometimes it's met with okay, and sometimes it's not. But making sure that I plan when I know a crash is coming is...
Yeah. Yeah. I think the things that I've done, you know, I guess over the years, because usually when I'm having a flare or something, it usually affects my hands and my legs. So I've gotten better at keeping stuff in the house that the kids can, you know, fix for themselves to eat, like simple things, so that nobody actually has to cook. They can just go. I didn't really teach Isaiah how to cook, but I'm teaching Kalia how to cook, you know, so that she can just go in there and just fix herself something. It's not an issue. So that's one thing. Or a lot of times I can feel the flare coming on, you know, and so before it gets bad, I can do things really quick, or maybe I will cook like a couple different things while I can. So then it's just in the refrigerator. So all she has to do is put it in the microwave, you know, stuff like that. And then I try to be as present as possible when I am feeling well, so that when I am down and I can't be, it's not as much, it doesn't hurt as much, you know, it doesn't make her feel like she's being neglected because she hasn't been neglected all this other time, you know? Yeah. I really try. But sometimes that's hard too, because, you know, life, but.
I think that that's, and you hit on something that I think is an overarching theme with parenting, which is we are super hard on ourselves when we can't show up. And we need to give ourselves a break. I don't care if you're well or not. Sometimes you're going to disappoint your children, and you have to be kinder to yourself so that when that, if there's a backlash, you can react to it in a way that isn't like, I don't feel well, or I had to work, or because that hurts their feelings. Yeah. But being able to open a dialogue, you know, I didn't feel well. This is what was going on that day. My boss asked me to work. I'm really sorry. I really wanted to be there. It's not that I didn't. You're still the most important person to me. Those are the reactions that they need, not the other one. And so that was a really good point that you brought up. I really like that.
Well, thank you. I guess just preparing as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
For the times when you are incapacitated. Yeah, being sensitive to their feelings, you know, because even if they do understand, it's still hard to not have that time with you. So being sensitive. And I think get it out of your head that this is time that you have to make up for. It's never going to happen, you know. It's never going to happen. So just get that out of your mind. You're dealing with chronic issues and you're down for the count more than you'd like to be, you know, that's just the way it is, and you're not going to get that time back. You can't make up for it. It's done.
Yeah.
I had a hard time with that in the beginning. Really hard time with that. It's like, oh, I have to make up for all the times that there's not enough time in the world.
So, no. There's not.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't torture yourself. It's not worth the torture.
Already being tortured in your body.
Your body is already a torture device, correct?
Yes. So don't turn your mind into one too.
Yeah. Exactly. I just wanted in closing to just talk about how others can support you as a parent, as a mother, and as a friend or a family member. I mean, I feel like Adrian and I have a really great support system, which is nice. But I think if you're just want to be an ally, there are a few things that you need to understand. And one of them is to believe the person when they're telling you how they feel, what their pain is, and how they're ill. Don't inject, well, maybe if you eat something like this, if you avoid that. No, I don't want to hear that at that moment. At that moment, all I want you to say is, I'm sorry to hear that. If that's all you can muster, that's all you need to muster. Don't offer advice unless it's asked for, honestly. Understand that we're going to cancel plans on you.
Just know that.
Just know it's happening. I love you, and I'm going to cancel on you. And I'm going to tell you that I love you. And then please don't stop inviting me because I canceled plans on you. It doesn't mean anything other than I'm having a bad day. It has nothing to do with you.
Exactly.
Some days we're gonna look worse and feel worse than others. When you tell me that I look like I got ran over, you are acknowledging that I don't feel well, but only say it once. Cause you know, like I'm already beating the shit out of myself in my head. So you only have to tell me once that I look or bad or that I look like I feel bad. really, you do. And if we want your help, we'll ask you. And it's okay to offer us help, but don't do it like every day. Nobody wants to hear, are you feeling okay? Can I do this? Can I do that? No.
Right.
No.
Right.
I know you're being loving and I appreciate you. I really do. But I will definitely ask you. Oh, God.
Yeah. And your nervous energy does not help.
No. And also, if you really feel like you don't understand, research the illness for yourself. Like, we're not experts in our illnesses. We know in general, we know what our doctors have told us. We know what we've Googled ourselves, but we're not subject matter experts at all. And everybody's going to be different. But if you look at just generally symptoms of somebody's disease and what happens to them and what's going on, sometimes it makes you understand what your friend's going through or your loved one, and to stop asking so many questions that we can't answer for you, because like Adrian said, there's this brain fog that happens for us. I know it's happened for me. I started a new job 3 months ago, and Monday morning I had forgotten how to do my job completely and was like, I just asked this question and gotten an answer. And, oh, let me look at my notes. Oh, I don't take notes because I find it annoying. So now I've had to retrain myself not to take notes because I'm not necessarily going to remember.
We need them.
You know, so it's okay for me to admit to myself that I need help sometimes. Remembering anyway.
Yes.
So
yeah, I think that's one. I think for me, that's the most important thing. Like, learn the disease.
Yeah.
You know, I try to be very patient with people, but at the same time, I'm already kind of dealing with a lot.
Yeah.
I don't really have the energy to answer 50 questions that you can Google. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't mean to be harsh or like that, you know, but it's, I mean, think of it this way. Like if you knew somebody who was in a really bad car accident and they broke their leg in like 7 different places, like, are you really going to sit and ask them about how the leg works and how this connects to this? And like, you're not going to do that. You're just going to be like, oh my God, that's really terrible. I can share my experience. I can't give you the lowdown on lupus as a, there's so many different variations. You know, there's so many different ways it presents itself in people.
Yeah.
I don't know all that.
Yeah. Right. I had no idea that my heart could get affected. Know that people with RA die of heart attacks because of it. It was like, oh shit. Like that was something brand new to me. Scary as hell, quite frankly.
Yeah. But
I try not to think of it as a death sentence, just something you live with.
I think for me that's the most important thing. If I tell you that I have lupus, you know, I'm not saying don't ask questions, like, you know, basic stuff is cool, but then after that, take yourself to Google and find out the rest.
Yeah,
you know, like, I'm not the walking lupus encyclopedia. Like,
I just hope that I never end up permanently disabled. I don't want to think about it. It's just that people ask me every other time when I have that damn purple cane. What the hell? Why were you fine just a day ago? Oh God. Like, I've told you I have rheumatoid arthritis. And the worst part is they need to stop calling it arthritis, because then people think that it's just your joints, and it's not. It's a whole myriad of crap that nobody wants to deal with.
Exactly.
I wish I wish I just had lupus, because then I could just be like, I got lupus, and then they don't know what the hell it is, so they'll leave you alone. With arthritis, they swear that if you eat the arthritis diet, you're gonna stop hurting. Oh really? Okay. I've done the whole I'm a vegetarian thing and not eating any meat and all that stuff, and you want to know what? I just went to the bathroom more. That was the outcome of that whole deal. And honestly, I mean, I did feel a little less weighed down, which is great. So sometimes I will go for a couple days with just eating vegetables, because it feels good. But then I miss my chicken, and then I miss the steak. And then I'm like, yeah, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and eat this stuff, because I'm still living.
In a nutshell, living with chronic disease, chronic pain, is not a walk in the park.
No.
And it is. It gets very complicated when you have children you have to take care of, especially being a single parent.
Yes.
Having to take care of. And we appreciate our support systems.
Yes.
Very much.
Yep.
You are the wind beneath our wings.
Did you ever know that you're my hero?
I couldn't help.
Or hero, whichever. Let's not forget the future is female, okay?
Boom.
But this has been our episode 6, and we hope that you've enjoyed and learned a little bit more about chronic disease and what it is and what it isn't. There's generally no cure for chronic disease. So when you meet somebody with one, just ride the ride. That's all I can say is ride the ride. And so we hope you tune into our next episode, Digital Life, where we talk about all things digital.